Good morning, Columbia and Greene County. You're tuned to 90.7 WGXC, broadcasting live from the command center in Accra this morning. I had a bit of vehicle trouble, and I threw out a telephone call yesterday to my lovely, wonderful, beloved manager, and she put the wheels in motion to get me set up here in Accra rather than Hudson this morning, and I'm just tickled pink to see how much we come together here really quick at WGXC Community Supported Community Radio, hands-on and all that creative community, you know the deal. So my name is Tyson, and I am live in Accra this morning. I'm a little out of my element with Zoom, but it's kind of cool to change it up a little bit. There's snow on the peaks this morning. Beautiful ride from Preston Hollow to Accra. So much to tell you. It's like urinating peanut butter. I just got stuff, but a tiny little mouth and too much stuff. So today we're going to get into the second piece of... I'm going to read second piece of Alfred Jarre's How to Construct a Time Machine. Last week, if you'll remember, if you examine your notes, we did the nature of the medium of time machine and time travel. And this week we're going to get into the theory of the actual machine, because I am building a time machine. And I don't believe I'm going to time travel, but I do actually kind of believe I'm going to time travel. So stay tuned for that. Part 2, Alfred Jarre, as you know, being one of the guiding lights of the Surrealist movement. Uberoi, Theater of the Absurd. Kind of zoomy in spirit. Starved himself to death. One of the last things he asked for was a toothpick. So, that's dedication. So stay tuned. Monday Musical Matinee is up next, as always. And we're going to see what kind of pictures the gremlins have today. Stay tuned, please. Don't go away. 90.7 WGXC, broadcasting live from Accra. This is your station, folks. 622-2598 is the hotline in Accra. Here we go. Thank you for being.
Thank you.
How to Construct a Time Machine, Part 2, Theory of the Machine. A machine to isolate us from duration, or from the action of duration, from growing older or younger, the physical drag which a succession of motions exerts on an inert body will have to make us transparent to these physical phenomena, allow them to pass through us without modifying or displacing us. This isolation will be sufficient. In fact, it would be impossible to design it any more efficiently if time, in overtaking us, gives us a minimal impulse, just great enough to compensate for the deceleration of our habitual duration conserved by inertia. This slowing down would be due to an action comparable to the viscosity of a liquid or the friction of a machine. To be stationary in time means, therefore, to pass with impunity through all bodies, movements, or forces whose locus will be the point of space chosen by the explorer for the point of departure of his machine of absolute rest or time machine. Or one can think of oneself as being traversed by these events, as a projectile passes through an empty window frame without damaging it, or as ice reforms after being cut by a wire, or as an organism shows no lesion after being punctured by a sterile needle. The Time Explorer's machine must therefore, number one, be absolutely rigid, or in other words, absolutely elastic, in order to penetrate the densest solid as easily as an infinitely rarefied gas. Two, have weight in order to remain stationary in space, yet remain sufficiently independent of the diurnal movement of the Earth to maintain an invariable orientation in absolute space. And as a corollary, although it has weight, the time machine must be incapable of falling if the ground gives way beneath it in the course of its voyage. Three, it must be non-magnetic so as not to be affected, we shall see why later on, by the rotation of the plane of polarization of light. An ideal body exists which fulfills the first of these conditions, the luminiferous ether. It constitutes a perfect elastic solid, for wave motion is propagated by it at the well-known speed. It is penetrable by any body, or penetrates any body without measurable effect, since the Earth gravitates within it as in empty space. But, and here lies the only similarity to the circular body or Aristotelian ether, it is not by nature heavy, and, as it turns as a whole, it determines the magnetic rotation discovered by Faraday. Now one common machine known to us all provides a perfect model for the luminiferous ether and satisfies the three postulates. Let us briefly recall the constitution of the luminiferous ether. It is an ideal system of material particles acting on one another by means of springs without mass. Each molecule is mechanically the envelope of a coil spring whose ends are attached to those of neighboring molecules. A push or a pull on the last molecule will provide a vibration through the entire system, exactly as does the advancing front of the luminiferous wave. The structure of this system of springs is analogous to the circulation without rotation of infinitely extensive liquids throughout infinitely small openings, or to a system consisting of rigid rods and rapidly rotating flywheels mounted on all or some of these rods. The system of springs differs from the luminiferous ether only because it has weight and it does not turn as a whole, any more than would the ether in a field without magnetic force. If one keeps increasing the angular velocity of the flywheels Or if one keeps tightening the springs, the periods of elementary vibrations will become shorter and shorter and shorter, and the amplitude becomes weaker and weaker and weaker. The movements will increasingly resemble those of the perfectly rigid system formed of material points mobile in space and turning, according to the well-known law of rotation of a rigid body, having equal moments of inertia around its three principal axes. In sum, the element of perfect rigidity is the gyrostat, or gyroscope. Everyone is familiar with those square or round copper frames containing a flywheel spinning rapidly around an interior axis. By virtue of its rotation, the gyrostat maintains its equilibrium in any position. If we displace the center of gravity a little bit out of the vertical of the point of support, it will turn in azimuth without falling. The azimuth is the angle subtended between the meridian and a plane determined by the vertical and a given fixed point, a star for example. When a body rotates around an axis, one of whose points is carried along with the diurnal motion of the Earth, the direction of the axis remains fixed in absolute space, so that for an observer carried along without his awareness in this diurnal motion, that axis appears to turn uniformly around the axis of the Earth, exactly as would a parallactic telescope constantly pointed at a particular star low down on the horizon. Three rapidly rotating gyrostats with shafts parallel to the three dimensions of space would produce a condition of cubic rigidity. The explorer seated in the machine would be mechanically sealed in a cube of absolute rigidity, capable of penetrating any body without modification, just like the luminiferous ether. We have seen that the machine maintains an invariable orientation in absolute space, but related to the diurnal movement of the Earth, so as to have a reference point to determine time traveled. Finally, the machine has no magnetized parts, as the following description will show. End part 2 of How to Construct a Time Machine, Theory of the Machine, by Alpha Jure. Thank you.
Battle for the Planet of the Apes.
The year is 2670 AD. The place, North America. In a ceremonial setting, an ancient lawgiver begins to read.
In the beginning, man and beast dwelt in peace. In time, evil men waged war both against their own kind and the apes, whom they placed in slavery. Then a leader appeared to deliver his fellow apes to freedom. Man, in the vilest of all wars, destroyed his own cities and his civilization. The leader lived through the Holocaust, along with a precious handful of survivors. He brought them out of the molten city to greener pastures, where ape and human could learn to live in harmony. His name was Caesar, and this is his story.
Caesar, in a few short years, you have carved a paradise out of the wilderness.
Paradise? That would mean happiness for all, would it not? McDonald has ape privileges, but there's no equality for us.
Maybe you're not old enough to remember how humans used to treat the apes.
I sense restlessness and discontent among the humans, and the gorillas have no liking for peace and order.
Look out, Caesar!
Hail, mighty Caesar!
General Aldo may be riding for a fall.
Before he causes Ape City to fall, I hope.
Aldo and his followers do pose a problem. Ah, Lisa, dear. McDonald will be having lunch with us.
Oh, he knows he is always welcome.
Aldo misses the excitement of the old days when we were fighting for our freedom. But how does one control a 400-pound gorilla?
You have the power. The gorillas are armed with swords. Your armory contains real weapons.
No! No! You think the unthinkable. You know our primal commandment. Ape shall not kill ape.
I know. Does Aldo?
Forgive me, dear friend. The burdens of leadership are heavy. If only I could see what lies ahead. I've heard that my parents knew the future. Did you ever hear that?
Your parents are half legend and half myth, Caesar. I've heard that they came from the future in a spaceship that passed through a time warp in space and landed in California back in 1973.
And that men, civilized men, were so frightened by talking apes that they murdered them.
Easy, Caesar. We've all paid for our folly.
Again, forgive my emotions. I never really saw my parents. They were slain when I was a baby.
You mean you never saw the videotapes of their interview after they landed? They were in the archives in the Forbidden City.
McDonald, could the tapes still exist?
You can't be thinking of searching for them. You yourself declared it a forbidden city, Caesar.
At dawn, three figures pass a gorilla lookout post on the road out of Ape City.
General Aldo, look. They're going toward Forbidden City.
It's Caesar himself breaking Caesar's rule. I hope he never makes it back. Look at those guns. They make my mouth water.
Caesar, when you move, you move. You commandeered weapons and a Geiger counter from the armory, and Professor Virgil from his classroom. And we're 2 days into the desert before my eyes are fully open.
Virgil's students need a rest from his fancy theories. He teaches that time is a circle and eternity a straight line, and their brains turn to lead. What we need is practical knowledge of radiation and Geiger counters.
The Geiger speaks to us all. We're getting close.
From a rise, the traveler's gaze transfixed at a city crumpled and melted by an inferno into a glassy slag heap.
War! Unbelievable and almost beautiful.
If death is beautiful. Find your subterranean vault quickly, McDonald. This radiation is deadly.
Hurry, tell Cole.
It's like a catacomb.
But it's plainer. We have time to look.
Governor Kelp, intruders!
Ah, there they are. The scanning devices are still operative. So, Mendez, you thought me mad to maintain wartime vigilance.
Three lost strangers don't make a war.
You don't recognize that...
You've been tuned to 90.7 WGXC. This has been the House of Zoom. My name is Tyson. Thank you all so much for your kind attention. If you gave it, Monday Musical Matinee is up next. Really cool Power Records. Battle for the Planet of the Apes, which I had when I was a kid.
We saw the guerrilla's war from space.
Stay tuned today and every day. All day, 90.7 WGXC, your creative community radio station. This is your station, guys.
Destruction of our planet.
And don't that underestimate the power of radio and the magic.
That is only one
as a creative
future.
Medium.
Time is like a mini lane highway.
Thank you again.
From the past to the future.
Stay tuned.
A car in lane A may crash while a car in lane B travels on.
Back again
it's
next year.
You can switch lanes.
Happy New Year, all.
Find the correct lane, Caesar, and lead your civilization to safety.
Switch lanes? That makes the burden of leadership unbearable.
Surrender or die!
Caesar explodes out of despair and into decisive action. Out the other way!
Observe the difference between philosopher and born leader. The latter switches lanes by reflex.
This way! Through here! They got away! How?
They were too strong for us. They were healthy.
Send out trackers. Find their headquarters. Mobilize for total war. An exhausting double time race across the desert brings Caesar and his companion close to home.
Caesar, you were magnificent.
We've done nothing. Our real work lies ahead.
Halt! Who goes there?
You know who I am, fool. Be in the schoolhouse tomorrow morning for an emergency council meeting.
Something tells me our chance may have come.
Governor Cobb, we have tracked the invaders to an ancient city to the north.
I, our side, this is our chance. An army that can be protected will not for its deadly intent sets out across the desert. At council meeting, Caesar sums up his disastrous. And so because the dead city turns out not to be dead, and because of the deranged condition of the survivors there, we must consider preparations for war.
No! 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 No!
I regret this more than you, but we must plan.
Bah! Planners, talkers, cowards. I welcome war, and I will not sit in council with a human.
Perhaps I shouldn't be here.
Nonsense, Aldo Bluff. I need you, MacDonald. I rely on you. I trust you. Through the long day and into the night, Caesar and his council will have a plan. Stop through to the center of the city. Create a bridge. Set a plan. General Aldo sets his own plans in action.
Group A, you know what to do. The rest of you, on to the armory.
And Pope's army reaches the outskirts of Ape City.
Look at that fool!
Why have we been scavenging all these years?
Caesar, Caesar! Aldo has looted the armory and has rounded up all the humans and imprisoned them in the stockade.
Where we worked through the night!